Hello, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for coming. My name's Sean. This is Diversify to Survive, Making Passwords Stronger with Adaptive Policies. So password policies, right? Those requirements that we all have to meet when we create a new password. Why do we have them? Why do they exist? Are they here just to annoy us? So if we look at the top 10 most common passwords from last year, the answer becomes pretty obvious that we do need password policies because people tend to choose pretty horrible passwords with exploitable patterns such as sequences of numbers, dictionary words, or keyboard patterns. So one password policy that stood the test of time was recommended by NIST over 10 years ago, and this password policy has since been changed a fair bit, but it's still used widely throughout industry. So with this policy, there's a minimum length of 8 characters, must include at least one of all 4 character classes, uppercase, lowercase, digit, and special characters, and can't have a dictionary word. So one password that would be allowed under this policy is actually a password that we saw in this study, Galiza One Star. So unfortunately, research has shown that even if constrained by restrictive password policies, human-chosen secrets still will exhibit predictable patterns. So for example, we know from statistical analysis of large dumps of leaked passwords, if you have a password policy that mandates that users create passwords with including both a number and a capital letter, the users will likely put the number at the end of the password, the number will likely be a 1, and the capital letter will likely be at the beginning. So we know this, and attackers know this as well. And attackers have ways to fine-tune their guessing attacks or their cracking approaches to exploit these patterns. So for example, the off-the-shelf open-source password cracking tool John the Ripper has configuration options called mangling rules, which allow attackers to tailor their dictionary attacks to meet these certain patterns. So the two mangling rules I've shown here, $1 means append a 1 at the end of a dictionary entry, and C means capitalize the first letter. And further, recent research involving data-driven approaches can find previously unnoticed patterns, or patterns that may be hard to spot with the eye. And these approaches involve Markov models or neural networks to create more advanced guessing attacks. So this brings us to adaptive password policies, which is the concept of what if a password policy could write itself? So with what we call a traditional password policy, or the password policies that we're all familiar with, they're defined once, usually by a system administrator, and they're designed to prevent known bad characteristics, such as the ones in the top 10. Whereas adaptive policies are designed to evolve over time as a function of the passwords that are created underneath them. And thus, adaptive password policies attempt to prevent passwords with any shared characteristics, not necessarily just the known bad or the most common ones. And thus, adaptive password policies can enforce password diversity. And this is a good thing because if you're an attacker and you learn of a particular pattern, in a typical password set, you'll probably get a fair number, let's say 20% of those passwords in that set. But with if the passwords were created under an adaptive policy, that pattern would only apply to a small number of passwords. So in this work, we have two research questions. One being, are adaptive password policies beneficial to password security? Do they actually increase password strength? And second, can they be implemented in a way that doesn't result in users revolting? So we considered two previously published adaptive password policies in this work. And we chose these because they met our own feeling that a password policy, when implemented, should not reduce the security of the system overall. So both of these policies can be implemented without needing to store the plain text passwords anywhere. So the first policy we considered, we call the structure-based adaptive policy. This was proposed by Leininger et al., and it's called Pathwell. So this policy relies on analyzing password structures, which is simply the sequence of character classes that make up a password. So, for example, if we have the dummy password, Galiza One Star, this password structure would be an uppercase followed by 5 lowercase, ending in a digit and a special character. So the structure-based adaptive policy works by maintaining a structure blacklist to encourage password structure diversity across an entire organization. So for example, if we have an organization with one user, I'll call this user A, and this user has password Galiza One Star, and if user B attempts to join the organization and create a new password, if user B attempts to create the password Tartan 6 Bang, this password will be rejected because both passwords share the same structure. However, if user B attempts a different password, say a slightly modified version of Galiza 1-star with one of the character classes substituted out for a different one, in this case a special character, then the password would pass the structure blacklist check. The other approach we evaluated we call the string-based approach, and this works in a more simple manner. So this approach simply ensures that all passwords in an organization are unique. So once a password has been seen and created by a user, it can never be used again. And this is done using a fancy Bloom filter. So it basically implements a dynamic dictionary check. So we conducted a user study to evaluate these two password policies. And we used Amazon's Mechanical Turk to recruit 2,600 participants. And we designed the study in two parts. Where in part one, we asked our participants to imagine as if their primary email had been compromised and they were forced to do a password reset. So the participants went through a series of steps to create a password under a number of conditions, simulating different kinds of adaptive password policy configurations. And we informed the participants that they would have to remember their password a few days later, thereby simulating logging into the system again. After they created the password, we gave the participants a survey where we asked them questions like, did they find it difficult or confusing? And then, as promised, 48 hours later, we invited participants to come back and simulate logging into the system, recalling their password. And again, we issued another set of survey questions. So participants were placed randomly in one of 12 conditions. And I won't dive into all of them in detail, but here's the high level. So as a control condition, we compared the effect of simply adding an adaptive password policy on top of a traditional password policy, which would be the likely use case in the real world, where an organization already has a password policy in place and they want to make it better by adding an adaptive element to it. We also simulated different size organizations by preloading these structure and string blacklists with the top common structures from leaked data sets as well as our own collected passwords over years of doing password studies. And finally, we were concerned that this extra element of this adaptive check could potentially pose a usability cost that would be too burdensome on our participants, especially because they had never seen this kind of thing before. So we developed and implemented a user feedback system that upon their initial password being rejected, it would provide them feedback and suggest modifications to their password in such a way that the resultant modified password would be allowed in the adaptive check. But participants were told that they could either take the feedback verbatim or they could use it as inspiration to make an entirely new password from scratch. So we look at two main groups of metrics in our results. On the one half, we look at password strength, and this is divided into two groups. So first off, we look at syntactic characteristics of the passwords themselves, and this would be things like entropy, length, distribution of character classes. But our primary metric of estimating password strength is by running a simulated password guessing attack on the passwords themselves and seeing how they stand up. We do this by using Carnegie Mellon's password guessability service, which was shown a few years ago to be a conservative estimate of what an experienced real-world penetration tester would achieve by attempting to crack passwords in the same way. On the usability side, we consider both observations that we can do on our web server, which include the number of timing data involving how long it took participants to create and then later recall their password, how many attempts it took them to create their password and later recall it, as well as if they attempted to do a copy-paste maneuver involving them storing their password in a file or elsewhere or maybe in their browser, and they auto-filled the password boxes in. And then for the participant sentiment, we measure this through survey questions, specifically asking things like, did they find the process frustrating or difficult, or if we also ask them if they additionally wrote it down. So next I'm going to introduce you to what we call a guessability curve. And this plot shows basically the number of guesses required to crack a particular percentage of a password set. So you can read these graphs in the following way. So on the x-axis, we show the number of guesses that were created by the password guessability service at CMU. And on the y-axis, we show the proportion of a password set that was guessed at that particular guess number. So you can interpret these graphs as the lower the curve, the harder the password set would be to crack. So the example curve that I've shown you thus far is actually one of our control conditions. So this was the passwords created under the NIST recommended policy, which again was minimum length 8 characters, must include at least one of all 4 character classes, and no dictionary check. But when you compare this to what happens when you apply a structure-based adaptive policy on top of the NIST recommended policy, you see a clear increase in password strength. In fact, you can interpret this as by looking at the horizontal offset at a particular percent guessed, say 40%. The offset is such that if you were an attacker and you were attempting to crack 40% of each of these password sets, you could expect to have to perform about 1,000 times as many guesses to have the same effect. And thus, 1,000 times as many guesses would mean 1,000 times as long. So we also measured the effect of adding in an adaptive policy on top of a longer traditional policy. So this longer traditional policy was found by prior work to be perhaps a better alternative to the NIST recommended policy. And this policy was defined as, instead of needing a minimum length of 8 characters, a minimum length of 12 would be required, and instead of requiring all 4 character classes, only 3 out of the 4 would be required. So again, when you add a structure-based adaptive policy on top of this, we do see a large improvement in resistance to guessing attacks. Specifically about, at a particular guess number, about half as many passwords would be cracked. So I should note, though, at this point, we preloaded this particular condition with about 2,000 blacklisted structures taken from some of the most common structures seen in public leaks. But we also ran other conditions where we increased the size of this structure blacklist, thereby simulating larger and larger organizations. So again, when we increase the size of the structure blacklist, you see a similar trend of about half as many cracks. And further, we found a somewhat surprising result. When you increase the size of the structure blacklist to a very large size, say around 50,000 blacklisted structures, you start to perhaps see diminishing returns, thereby maybe indicating that at that point you may want to start thinking about other methods, such as allowing more than one structure to exist in the black, or allowing more than one password to fall into a structure in the blacklist. So what about the string-based approach that I mentioned previously? Well, when compared to the structure-based approach, we don't see much of an improvement in password security. So I have to note, though, that both the string and structure-based policies were configured with the same 10,000 most common password seed, if you will. The difference being that from those 10,000 passwords in the seed, that resulted in about 2,000 unique structures. So the structure-based policy had a 2,000 structure blacklist, whereas the string-based policy had a 10,000 raw string standard dictionary check. But a 2,000 structure blacklist has a resultant effective key space of over 10 to the 56 passwords, thereby indicating that banning a one particular structure can have a much larger effect than banning even one or 10,000 blacklisted passwords. So now, can we say that we achieve these security improvements without severe usability costs? And the answer to that is yes. So we found that across every instance of where we added an adaptive policy on top of an existing traditional policy, we saw very little effect on usability. In particular, we saw no effect on the recall time or the number of attempts it took people to remember their passwords, as well as their general sentiment. One downside that we did observe was that when using a structure-based adaptive policy, this resulted in more creation attempts. And further, the larger you make that blacklist, the larger that creation attempts, or the number of creation attempts also went up. So in conclusion, we've shown that adaptive policies, when configured properly, can significantly increase passwords guessing resilience, and can be done so at minimal usability costs. So I'd like to thank my co-authors and faculty advisors for contributing and supporting this work. And that's going to be it for this talk. Thank you.
Thanks very much. That was a really interesting talk. Quick question, and this may be due to my own ignorance. Can you say something about the recall at 48 hours? Why was 48 hours chosen versus a week versus something else like that? And do you do anything also to control contextual supports to remembering passwords in any way?
So the details of that 48 hours is in the paper, but in summary, the prior work has shown that if participants can remember their secret 48 hours later, they can likely remember it farther after that. And as for, can you repeat the part about contextual?
Yeah, did you do anything to keep contextual prompts from reminding people what their password was or anything like
that? We didn't do any of that sort of thing.
Yeah, so a question about kind of the size of organizations that you simulated in here. Because you mentioned there's minimal usability costs. I'm just curious how high you drove this up. Would this be true for a company like Google where you're talking hundreds of millions of users? How many blacklists would that generate? And would that have, did you explore organizations at that scale or just much smaller?
So this is the size at which we went up to. And we simulated this by using a probabilistic context-free grammar, which is a password modeler and guesser that we've used in prior work. And we basically trained it on large corpuses of leaked data sets as well as our own collected data sets. And we used it to output it, in some cases, in the extra large size blacklist, 10 to the 7 password guesses. And from there, we took the unique structures out of them. So in the biggest, around 50,000 unique structures. But when you get to huge user pools on the size of Facebook or Google, as we've shown, there is a diminishing return effect from how big that blacklist can get. And at that point, system administrators are going to want to start to consider allowing more than one password to exist within a structure in that structure blacklist.
Thanks.
So this is more like a comment that I will try to phrase as a question. But I feel that one of the things that's when like you're showing the results of the graphs, and this is something that all of these password papers tend to do, is that if you're looking at sort of the median and saying, okay, well, it's 1,000 times more work for the attacker here, mm-hmm. I think what's much more important is how much does it reduce the really weak passwords, like the bottom, 10% of passwords from being really highly guessable to, much, much harder, right? That to me is like the more important metric.
So that depends on your threat model. So if you're talking about like an online attack, those passwords with very low guess numbers start to matter a lot more than compared to, say, an offline attack where the entire list of hashed passwords is leaked. And in that case, attackers can use their GPUs and their clusters to get to very high guess numbers. So it could be argued that it's needed on both ends of the spectrum.
Hi, Andrew McNamara from NC State University. I was curious if you looked at the, after a participant successfully entered a password that did not match a previous structure, if you looked at the collision rate of those successful passwords, and if there was a high collision rate, if that was present in your in the data sets that have more structures in them, or maybe the data sets that have those higher structures didn't contain those the structures that people actually used.
So we didn't look at that in particular, but we have considered that, and that would definitely be an interesting thing for future work.
Last question. Hi, my name is David. Thank you. It's a really interesting talk. I just wanted to ask, you may have mentioned this already, but have you thought about the threat of an attacker creating a bogus account to try and explore the space of passwords using the system, since it gives you feedback about what's already in the set of passwords?
Right. So we did think about this, and this is basically a user trying to query the database, like in an Oracle attack, to find out what are details about what passwords or structures have already been banned, and then he could then know, okay, I'm not going to go guess those particular patterns in my guessing attacks. So yes, we have thought about that. And in a real-world implementation of an adaptive policy, you would want to put in rate-limiting techniques or like CAPTCHA, if you will, or source IP address banning to prevent someone from just sending a million password creation queries to learn too much about the database itself.
Thanks.